mixed emotions today as one of the truly great players, not just pitchers, but players in the history of the Toronto Blue Jays, has retired, but has retired as a Toronto Blue Jay. He signed a one-day contract in order to do so. Here's the doc. Here's Roy Halladay. Roy, how are you? And congratulations on the retirement announcement.
Thank you, guys. I'm doing great. I appreciate it.
Whose idea was it to retire as a Blue Jay?
It really was ours. We talked about it, my wife and I, and then talked with our agency, and we really felt like it was something that was important to us. Coming up with the organization, everything they've done for me just gave me so many great opportunities that, you know, we felt like it was the right thing to do.
I mean, had this been something that, I don't know when you started thinking about retirement, but had you always been thinking, having this in the back of your mind, that's what I'd like to do?
Yeah, I definitely did. I felt like it was hard to leave Toronto, and, you know, going to Philadelphia, I wanted to have a chance to get to the playoffs and the chance to experience that atmosphere. And I really had always kind of held out that I could do it in Toronto. And as I got older, I started to realize, you know, this is, I'm getting older and the window's kind of getting smaller. I really need to force the issue a little bit. And that's why I felt like it was important that I needed to go then. But it just never, as much as I enjoyed my time in Philadelphia, leaving Toronto just didn't always feel 100% right. So I felt like I wanted to be able to come home, so to speak, and really acknowledge the fans and the organization and let them know how much I appreciated them.
You wouldn't know this, but there has been some conversation over the past few weeks on this program concerning the possibility of the Blue Jays either signing you or at least taking a look at you during spring training. At what point did you come to the realization that this was the time to hang him up?
I think I was kind of leaning that direction probably before the start of last season. You know, we had talked about it, and, you know, I knew physically my time was really becoming limited. And I think after the course of the season, I felt, you know, if I really had to, I could probably go out there for a season, but it wouldn't be at the level that I wanted it to be. And I think family-wise, to make that sacrifice, it didn't make a whole lot of sense for us. You know, I felt like I was really missing out on a lot at home. My kids are the age where they're really starting to get involved in sports and school, and things are getting serious or getting close to high school, and I don't want to miss these times. And I felt, you know, to sacrifice that to go out and be average at best, and that just didn't sit very well with me. So we'd kind of been looking at it for a little while, and then I think, you know, after talking to the doctors and looking over my back and seeing where it was and potentially what could happen if I pushed it farther, it just made a lot of sense that this was the right time.
Part of the extraordinary part of your story in Toronto, Roy, was the way it went when you were young and going all the way to the bottom and starting up and coming back and then becoming the pitcher you became. And it's funny, you know, it comes up every time a young pitcher in Toronto struggles. It came up with Ricky Romero.
Yep.
Could you go all the way back? I mean, when you look back at that segment of your career, do you look back at it fondly, or as a terrible struggle, or as a time really when your life turned around almost?
You know, I look at it as, you know, in two respects, really. I don't have very comforting memories of it. It was definitely a challenge, but I also feel like it was a point where my life did kind of turn around, and I was really forced to do some things differently and kind of to search myself and figure out not only how did I want to play baseball, but what kind of person did I be. And I really had to make a lot of decisions and change a lot of things. And so it was a turning point in my life, but I think it also was a motivator the rest of my career. It's something that in the back of my mind, I used to have nightmares about it happening again. So I really did not want to do that. And I felt, you know, the best way to avoid that, being as close as I came to being out of baseball, I knew that I had to put everything I had into it every day to avoid that.
Were you, I mean, I think you may have answered the question already, but I was set to ask you, were you afraid when you went back down to Dunedin that year that your career might be over? And I guess the answer is yeah.
I definitely was. And, you know, at first I thought that maybe I could stay in the minor leagues for a little while, and if I got to a different organization, maybe I'd get a different shot. The longer I was there, I kind of really decided that, you know what, if it works, great. If it doesn't, that's fine too. But I'm going to do everything I can to make it work. And really, that's the only way I could accept myself and be comfortable with the effort I put in, was knowing that I did everything I could. And if it didn't work out, you know, I was prepared to, you know, come up with different career choices. But I felt like I really had to devote myself at that point, if that's something that I wanted to do. And if it didn't work out, I was going to be okay with it. But the only way I would be okay is if I really poured my heart into it.
With Roy Halladay, who retires today as a Toronto Blue Jay, signing a one-day contract in order to do so. When you were sent down to Dunedin, now correct me if I'm wrong, were you here for a full 2 years or part of 2 years before you were sent down?
I was there. 99 was my first full season. 2000, I was there for most the entire season. I got sent down for a couple weeks here and there, but was pretty much there the entire season. So it was pretty much 2 years,
right,
almost two full years. And then the next spring training, the struggles really continued, and that's when they told me what they had decided, what they wanted to do. And, of course, I didn't agree with it, but it worked out.
So a lot, and the story is that the change that was made was essentially changing your arm angle of your delivery. So was that it? Was that really what it took?
No, you know, I think that was actually probably one of the smaller pieces of the puzzle. For me, it was really developing the mental side of baseball. And I had never failed before. I didn't know how to deal with failure. I was lacking confidence after that, and I didn't know how to rebuild that. I was basically kind of struggling at, you know, what I'd always done best my entire life, and didn't know how to turn that around. So my wife happened to be walking through a bookstore. I had been talking to some other people, baseball psychologists and stuff, and she found this book written by Harvey Dorfman, The Mental Game of Baseball. And so I started reading it, and then I found his Mental ABCs of Pitching. And come to find out, when J.P. Ricciardi came over, he had worked with Harvey in Oakland. So I asked J.P. if he knew him, and he put me in contact with him, and we established a friendship that lasted up until he passed away 2 years ago. And it made all the difference in the world for me. It really did. That, to me, that mental part was the biggest part in changing my career around. And then I think after, you know, we added the mechanical changes, that made the biggest deal in the changes. So it was really kind of a two-part thing, but the mental part was the biggest factor in that.
Roy, you pitched over, well, the better part of two decades after your draft year. And I think in a lot of ways you define, people would see you as a workhorse pitcher, a guy you could give the ball to and go out there and give you a lot of innings. And I know my colleague Bob here talks often about he thinks, you know, the way in which pitching has changed, that you don't see guys pitching as many innings. I'm just wondering, over the course of your career, because it went for so long, do you see a decisive difference in starting pitching in particular between when you started and where it is now as you leave?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I first came in, the starting pitchers were expected to win the game the day they pitched. And, you had a couple guys in the bullpen, you know, if things went bad, and you always had a closer, but you really didn't have these specialized relievers, you know, one to come in, face the lefty, one to face the righty, one to pitch the eighth inning, one to get that guy ready for the eighth inning. There just wasn't that depth down there. There was, you know, you had your starting pitcher, a couple guys if things went bad, and then you had your closer. I remember in Toronto thinking how lucky we were having Quantrill and Dan Plesac, and thinking, man, this is great. We got a righty and a lefty to pitch the eighth inning, and we got our closer for the ninth. This is phenomenal. And now you can't win without those guys and without a couple guys in front of them. So it definitely has changed.
Was there a time in your career where you would have said, I'd like to get the ball every fourth day rather than every fifth day?
Absolutely, yeah. And I know for a short period, that was actually brought to the table when JP was there. And we had a couple starters who really didn't feel like that was something that they could do. And so we weren't able to do it. I actually was pretty excited about it. And, you know, I watched the Rockies this year. They did a little bit. You know, if you're going to do it, I would still like to go out and be able to throw close to 100 pitches. You know, I think they had a 70-pitch limit. But, yeah, that would be a challenge, you know, and I think it's possible you just cut down on your bullpens in between. I mean, so many pitchers go out and throw 50 pitches in between starts. You take those 50 pitches and put them into your start, you could, I think, easily pitch on in a four-day rotation.
Well, Nolan Ryan recently, when he was with the Texas Rangers, of course, as president of the Rangers, suggested that he would have liked the Rangers to experiment with a four-man starting rotation. And, of course, I grew up in an era where that's what guys did. Every team had a four-man rotation. You pitched every fourth day. Guys, it was not unheard of for guys to pitch 250, even 300 innings in a season. And maybe mistakenly, but I've referred to the to the way they use pitchers today in the major leagues is babying starting pitchers. Do you think there are a significant?
Absolutely.
You think there are? Go ahead.
I agree. I think you know, you look at how and you know, he's a great kid, Steven Strasburg, when he came up, how they shut him down at their one shot at the playoffs was baffling to me. But I think that this is how the guys are being programmed now. There's so much money being invested in these players early on that they can't go out and really experiment with their arms and see how long they can last. They have to really protect those guys. And, you know, the one thing I've seen so much of is like I said, they have a pitch limit on every kid in the minor leagues that he can't throw over, you know, 90 or 100 pitches, but they're going to let him go throw as many pitches as he wants in that bullpen. And to me, you're not monitoring the entire pitcher if you're doing that. You're covering one end, but then you're also letting these kids abuse themselves on their own in between. So, you know, to me, you monitor that side, and you let them go out and pitch as much as they possibly can. I think that's what builds arm strength. That's what builds durability. But when you're shutting these kids down at 100 pitches, limiting their innings, you're pretty much training them to pitch that way their entire career. You know, I think the more they can pitch when they're younger, the more that carries over into their career, and that's kind of how they develop.
You said earlier in this interview you left Toronto because you wanted a chance to make the playoffs. You didn't say because I wanted to win a ring. You said I wanted to make the playoffs. So now that it's over, is the career complete? Do you feel like, I mean, geez, you threw a no-hitter in the playoffs, but, I mean, do you feel you got everything you wanted, or do you feel just that one thing eluded you?
Yeah, I definitely always wanted the World Series, and I do feel like, you know, that would have been a really kind of a crowning moment for me. But, you know, like I said, the initial thought was to go there and give myself a shot at the playoffs. And at first, you know, I really felt like I needed that shot. And I felt like given that shot, you know, over a couple of years, hopefully it's with the right team, you know, things are going to work out. But they didn't. And I think, you know, as a player, you know, in 2011, we won 102 games. It was a franchise record. You know, we have one of the best starting rotations in baseball, and we caught some bad breaks. And so you realize that you really have to be in the right place at the right time. You know, it's kind of like being struck by lightning. There's not a ton that you can do to control it, as much as you think there is. So it definitely would have been a great moment for me. But it's a team moment, and it's something that you have to be in the right place at the right time. There's not a lot you can do as an individual to affect that. So, you know, I tried my best. I just couldn't do it.
With Roy Halladay, one question before we let you go. Anytime a player is in your position announcing his retirement and we talk to them, we are inclined to wonder what is next and whether a continued career in another capacity in the sport is in the future. And normally, I would say, Roy, with players of your skill set and level of achievement, most of those players, for whatever reason, either choose not to stay in the game or perhaps don't necessarily make the best mentors. Having said that, you went through sufficient trial and tribulation, as you documented earlier in your career, that perhaps some of the things that you assimilated when you were a young and struggling professional player might serve you well. Have you thought about a long-term future outside the game?
I have. And Alex has been kind enough, Anthopoulos, to let me come in spring training and be around the guys and be a part of things there. And then also, I told him I'd really like to be kind of a fly on the wall in the front office and see how the draft works, see how the trade deadline works, kind of learn the ins and outs of how things go on up there. You know, obviously you feel like you have an idea, but, you know, once you're actually up there, it's a whole different thing. But you're right. I mean, it definitely takes a special skill set to be a coach, to be able to teach players. So for me, it's going to be another trial and error. I'm going to get involved with as many things as I can and kind of see what sticks and what works for me. But I would definitely love to be a part of the game and somehow give back everything that's been given to me.
Well, that's exciting news for everybody. We wish you the best of luck with that. And now, given that knowledge, we'll look forward to seeing you in Dunedin in the spring.
Sounds good. Look forward to being there.
Congratulations again on a tremendous career. And on behalf of everybody here, and not just in Toronto, but as you know, this is Canada's team in this country listening and watching to this program. Thank you for a lot of great afternoons and evenings at the Ball Yard.
Well, thank you, and thank you to the fans, too. They've meant a lot in my life and meant a lot to my family, so we really appreciate it. Thank you very much.